Okay, let's call the meeting to order. It is Thursday, September 19th, 2019. It's about 4:06 in the afternoon here in the Guam EPA conference room. We got a quorum, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We have Steve Hollister, Steve Carrera, Steve Carbolito, wow, Terry Steve Brooks, and Roth, and Bob Perrin here. So we have six, so we're good on the quorum side. You guys want to take a look at the agenda and move to approve or
to approve?
Okay, Terry moves to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Ann. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the agenda is approved. You want to take a look at the minutes, folks, and make comments? Hey, Chloe.
Taking place at EPA toxicologist Patrick was in regards to differences in NCL.
Yeah, NCL.
Should be M.
Okay, correct that then.
Okay.
That was cool. So that would that change down in the second one too?
Yeah, so I guess change all the N's to M's.
So move to approve as amended.
Second.
Okay. Terry moves to approve, seconded by Ann. with that change on the second page in the PFAS paragraph, the NCL should be MCL. With that change, all in favor? Okay, so the minutes are approved. Let's move on to the administrator's report, which will be given by Connie, as Walt is out sick.
Okay, yes, okay. Walter, I apologize for not being here. So for his administrator's report, the agency is processing 96 operating well permit applications from GWA. These five-year operating permits were expired over a year, but annual fees were made on time. We're working closely with GWA to ensure that operating permits will be renewed in a timely manner. Wells are still being monitored, and we're still producing clean drinking water. The administrator's performance evaluation is online on the agency's website, and the notice of availability was published on September 12th. WAM EPA led efforts for disposal and recycling at this year's Labor Day picnic. Thank you, Bob, for your generous donations of bins for the waste and recyclables. The State Emergency Response Commission, Local Emergency Planning Commission, the CERC LEPC, was held on September 6th. Kay Lawrence from US EPA did a presentation up at the Civil Defense Office. There was a public hearing on Bill 19835, an act to adopt the RRF rules and regs, which was held on September 6th. And the Region 9 was on scene. They're coordinating with Guam in October to address some abandoned vessels and possibly PCBs, issues at the old dead oil transfer stations, and possible additional off-base Agent Orange samplings. The agency held a public hearing on proposed rules and regs for the U.S. Keys on September 11th. The agency engaged in discussions with the preferred bidder for the new GPA power plant. We are also assessed with longstanding stormwater issues on the Rojas Street in Harmon, working with GWA, GPA, and OOG, Office of the Attorney General, on potential mitigation for long-term solution. Agency participated in the Lieutenant Governor's Micronesia-wide cleanup day, roving all sites and cleanup at the Pagat Cave. The agency was also involved with the dengue response. PEP provided pesticides, provided guidance on proper insecticide applications. Public Health, Department of Public Health, contractor's scope of work, based on the contractor's scope of work, and informational briefings to the 84 homes at the high-risk areas of Manilao. Solid Waste is also assisting with the assisted in the solid waste manners pertaining to the mosquito vector controls. The agency continues to provide continued support in the state of an emergency. Nick is currently up there right now attending the 3 o'clock briefing that is happening on a daily basis. So the agency is working on obtaining commitment letter from US EPA to give Office of the Governor and BBMR the DOI funding for the agency building. And of course, Jesse and Walter just came back from attending the U.S. Coral Reef Task Force meeting. And then I'll pass anything to Jesse if he wants to share on what transcribed at the Coral Reef meeting.
The meetings went well. It was the first time since 2006 it was held out in Palau. The task force meeting is held twice a year, usually once in February in D.C. and then one out in the jurisdictions, and it rotates like the PIEC every year between the jurisdictions, USVI, Puerto Rico, Florida, Hawaii, Guam, CNY. Those are the main ones that it rotates through. This year it was well attended. The new NOAA Undersecretary came, FEMA Undersecretary came, of course, and one more cabinet level member was there. The main issue that we're talking about again, was ballast water. The Caribbean is going through a big disease outbreak, and they're attributing it to ballast water being transferred between cargo ships that are transversing the Caribbean. And so one of the big efforts is to curb ballast water discharge out in the Pacific, because they think once the ballast water gets through the Panama Canal and out through the Pacific, the same thing's going to happen. So that was the big issue with them. And we had a side meeting with the Undersecretary of DOI, who is one of the final signatories on the CIP, Construction Improvement, the grant that the governor signed for us to get the $6 million. So we had a sidebar with him, and it seemed promising that he would look toward Guam favorably and approving that. So other than that, that's basically what happened.
That's the administrator's report.
Okay. Is this continuing resolution for the U.S. budget? Is that going to affect our grant money or the timing or anything of that money coming?
For the commitment letter?
No, well, for the money, us getting the money. Usually when they do the continuing resolutions, that
we
presents
don't know yet.
Issues.
We haven't heard anything
oh, okay.
yet.
Usually presents issues
yeah.
for us. Yeah. Okay.
So we won't know anything till the end of the year or sooner, hopefully.
Oh, okay. All righty. Any questions, you guys, on the administrator's report?
Just the ballast tank stuff. That's the disease is attacking the coral there.
Yes. So one of the things that we started initiating talks with US EPA last year was a no discharge zone for Guam. So they have that along the west coast of Florida. So if we continue work, hopefully we work with US EPA to get that done and it designated for Guam. So that will help. So with that, no ships can discharge ballast water within 10, 12 miles of Guam. So right now they can discharge in Apra Harbor as well because we don't have that no discharge zone designation.
Okay, now let's look at old business. Usually Kristen gave the updates on these NOVs and stuff, right? Is there anybody else that
can
speak
to
it?
Most of them.
Oh, okay.
Can I see the list again real quick just to jog the memory? So Subaki Hotel, Nippo USA, We've sent those guys the proposed, we've asked them for their names to put on the proposed final settlement agreement, which is complete. We're still waiting to hear back from them who's going to sign on their behalf. But that's for the final, we can't share the amount. I guess Kristen always told me not to, but we have settled on a dollar amount for that fine. Lin's Hardware and Su and Jing and Fei Yang Corporation, those are the Lead Ban Act. Still no new updates. We're still waiting on them to come back to us with any additional certification documents. They claim they're trying to work with their Chinese suppliers to get their faucets certified, but if it doesn't happen within the next month, we're going to reach out to them and basically tell them they have to dispose of these things or return them. Smith Bridge is, again, another one that they had come into us. They had submitted their notice of intent to appeal, but then they came in and met voluntarily with Walter and myself and said that they had no intention to come before the board and appeal and they wanted to comply. But unfortunately, since we had our initial meeting with them, they haven't taken any actions. They're not working on the site anymore, and they installed their temporary erosion controls, but they've basically just kind of stopped working on it. So we're going to be following up with them in the next few weeks to make sure that they are going to do something, because if they walk away from the site and not restore it to meet our grading standards, they're going to have probably another NOV on their hands. That's the updates there.
Okay. Thanks, Frank.
Thanks.
Okay. RRF approval process status? Is that Sabrina or Conchita?
Well, I think Connie just gave you a little update on that. By the way, thanks, Bob and Ann, for coming to the public hearing. So the next step, as the senator had mentioned, is to take it before the whole body. She did, and they're having session next week, so she had mentioned that she had intended to bring it up in this upcoming session. She did ask us for some comments on some of the changes that she would like to introduce, and we've already prepared that. It's on Walter's desk for his approval before we send it down. We hope to get that down by tomorrow, Friday. And that's where we're at with that.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, at that public hearing, one of the senators asked if the board would be able to handle overseeing the fund, the revolving recycling fund, and making sure it was spent properly. And I told her, yeah, you know, we've got good professional board members here who know what they're doing and take their responsibility seriously. And then they said, well, what happens if the board changes out? I said, that's on you. You're the one who approves the new board, so that's ain't got to do with me. So I assume you're going to approve honest people.
Wisely.
Yeah, so she said, oh, yeah, that's right. And she started laughing, so she didn't take it as a smart response, just kind of said, yeah, I guess you're right. So, anyway, PFAS activities update. Oh, that's you again, Brian.
Brian.
One of the presentations, well, just to keep us on track.
Yeah,
right.
That's just
we have slides.
Okay.
Want me to push the update buttons?
You could. There should be open on the bottom if you go to one of the
PowerPoint windows at the bottom down there. And,
gotcha.
There's two of them there.
Okay.
Go to the PFAS activities update.
This one here?
There you go, that one. You can just maybe
put it in the slideshow. And then go down to the, where it says the four little bars in the corner. Next to the volume.
Little screen symbol over there.
There?
No, the next
one.
That
next.
One.
No, next one.
Next one? Yeah.
Oh, how does that work? Okay, yeah, that'll work. So anyway, go ahead and
then hit your arrow. There you go.
So just a quick timeline as where we are in Guam. 2016, the EPA health advisory for 70 nanograms per liter, which is 70 parts per trillion, for the two chemicals, PFOA and PFOS, was introduced. And just a few months later, GWA and Guam EPA worked together to take all wells out of service that exceeded that number. It was a very brief timeline because it jumps right ahead to the current time. And what we had in front of us at least a month ago, or 2 months ago, was a proposed MCL from the legislature. Our agency, Walter and I, testified at two different events there. One was the informational briefing, and one was the public hearing about that. We can go on. Next slide. Just to give you guys some updates on MCLs. Again, the EPA doesn't have an MCL. MCL is a maximum contaminant level. What they have is a health advisory, which is a non-enforceable risk-based number that they issue to drinking water systems as a way to manage risk, right? So they've said that basically anything below 70 parts per trillion is safe for people to consume based on the science that the EPA toxicologists have reviewed. It's for the chemicals of PFOA and PFOS only combined. There's thousands of PFAS chemicals, PFAS chemicals out there, but this is based on the two worst ones that they knew of at the time. They've known about those for a couple of decades that have been pretty bad. Again, it's not an MCL. US EPA has, it's on their, they're required to come up with their regulatory determination at the end of this year. A regulatory determination means that they will decide at that time whether or not to regulate the chemical as an enforceable MCL. I recently came across information that I didn't know from earlier this year that the EPA administrator promised a congressman in the United States that they would issue an MCL, so it looks like it's pretty much determined that they're going to move forward with an MCL. If they do move forward with that, it's by law, it's about a 3.5 to 5.5 year process, depending on how quickly things go. It may actually go quicker because a lot of the science is done, and it's a very hot topic for the U.S. Congress. Next. Right now, there's six other states that are proposing MCLs, but they haven't gotten particularly far with them. I've listed them all up there for the different chemicals, and all I wanted to show you with this is just the wide range. So each state is proposing a different number than the other states, which makes it very confusing to know what we should adopt if we were to adopt an MCL. You can go on. We talked to an EPA toxicologist. He gave a presentation to our agency and to all the other stakeholder agencies, including the legislature, about a month and a half ago. And he explained to us that the differences between all those state MCLs, why they're all so different, because each toxicologist has individually looked at the data and selected different things that they think are important, and especially these what they call uncertainty factors. They'll take a number, then they'll apply an uncertainty factor, which I think on the EPA number is a factor of 500. So the actual safe level, according to the science, is like 500 times higher, but just to be careful, they divide it by another 500 to get it down to that parts per trillion level, to where they think, okay, this will account for all possible uncertainty. Because you don't really know, right? Like a mouse is like a human, or if a human that was in one study is the same as a baby in another state, you know, you just don't know. So that's what they do. So that's really the difference between all those things. They really are based on the same studies, the same science. It's just the decision points made by the individual toxicologists are slightly different. So, you know, again, I put the dilemma for us and the legislature is if we are going to adopt a number, what do we adopt? It's, right now it's kind of muddy. Next slide. California Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, so-called OEHA, they're a very respected organization. They've got a staff of over 50 toxicologists, a yearly budget of like $26 million. We met them when we were there a few months ago. They've been respected around the world for decades. They've been held almost in as high as esteem as EPA. Other countries often use their numbers to create their own standards. We had our meeting with the EPA toxicologist, and he recommended using their numbers when and if they come up with one. I had recommended the same previously based on previous experience with this stuff. And California has not adopted an MCL yet. They're 2 to 3 years away probably from adopting one. They're going to, but they've adopted what they call a notification level. And what they did for that, they just went ahead and adopted what New Jersey's proposed, which is something that the Senator Sabina Perez has expressed interest in, those New Jersey numbers. And they're quite a bit smaller than the EPA number. EPA is going for 70 parts per trillion. New Jersey's going for 13 and 14, respectively, for PFAS and PFOA, one of, you know, somewhere around there. They're very low. You can go ahead. Next slide. Just to give you some updates on things that are happening soon, GWA is about to start a whole new round of PFAS monitoring on the island. Prior to this, the only island-wide data we had was from the UCMR 3, which is the Unregulated Contaminant Rule Monitoring, which was done in 2015 and 16. And it was done at an older analytical method with a detection level of just 25 parts per trillion. So, for example, if we were to choose the New Jersey numbers, we wouldn't know. I mean, potentially every single well on the island has PFAS in it at that level because we only measured down to 25, right? More or less. I think it may be a little bit different depending on the chemical. So Guam Waterworks is going to start looking at some of these other wells, and they're going to base it on using this new method, which gets you down to 2.5, I mistyped that. You see down to 2.5 parts per trillion. So we will get a very good idea then of whether or not there's more PFAS out there than we thought. They're going to start with their current UCMR representative monitoring plan, which it looks at all 120, 130 wells and just picks the ones that are kind of representative of the island. So that way they're not spending so much money monitoring every possible well. They're just looking at areas. But in addition to that, they're going to add additional wells around what we call known or probable sources. Any place that's ever used foam, firefighting foam, or any place that we suspect has. So around Anderson Air Force Base, every well that borders the groundwater there will be sampled. Going up the GIGO trough from Tumon Maui well all the way up, we're going to try to sample wells up through there to see if there's anything coming down from old military facilities up in that area. Anything around the airport, of course, anything around Ordaz, all those sites that where we suspect there could have been PFAS used. And they're planning on starting in October, so we could have results toward the end of the year to see how things are looking. Next. So going back to the legislation, and since we have a representative here, maybe we can get some updates too, but I'll just give our position. This is the position that we stated, Walter and I, during the public meetings and public hearings. We would support using the EPA health advisory, the 70 parts per trillion, as an action level or a response level. We don't recommend setting an MCL. I guess I lost my slide that said that, but the reason we don't recommend an MCL, and we said that repeatedly, and it's kind of hard to understand, but an MCL is a regulatory legal term. It's not just a number. And we've adopted the federal regulations, and MCL has to go through this process. Like EPA is going to spend 3 years going through this process to set one. It can't just be set by lawmakers through a law. It has to go through this process of science and peer review and public comments and all that. But we could adopt something like California's done and go with a response level, a notification level, or an action level. And so we're recommending that if they want to take action, and it may be a good idea to go ahead and do something like that. We, again, originally recommended sticking with EPA's health advisory level, but now based on the EPA toxicologist advice, we might agree to going with the lower number from New Jersey since California has adopted that. That gives us good justification now. Originally we had, you know, those piled numbers from all the other states, and so what do we pick? Well, California's picked that one. We can say, okay, we're hanging our hat with California. We have a basis now. An action level would come with it, would bring with it some sort of responses, right? So if you had a response level, what would those responses be? Our recommendation is that you make sure that you don't provide water to the public that exceed the response level, that you have treatment requirements. If you are going to use a well that exceeds that, you would put treatment on that so it stays below that level, and some monitoring requirements to ensure that we keep a continuous eye on the well so that we don't get caught by surprise by a well that shows up one day at zero, one day at 100. We've seen that. They're variable. The wells that we have, they're contaminated. They'll go sometimes from zero to several hundred parts per trillion. Next. And that's all I've got. That's the PFAS update.
What is the treatment for that? Is that that carbon filter?
Yes,
activated carbon.
Activated carbon is great stuff. It can pull out all kinds of chemicals, any kind, especially the organic chemicals. But you have to pick the right carbon. And I think some work is being done right now with Guam Water Works. Well, they already have some great experience here. They've had treatment for a while, so they can look and see that. But they've got their design underway for A23 and A25, the ones at Agaña Shopping Center. And their designer for that is now doing the research into what type of carbon would be best. And they'll do some field testing, too, or jar testing, they call it. Okay. Any questions on PFAS? I think I got the next subject, too.
Let's see, what's the next
one? He doesn't
want
to sit.
I'm sorry, what is the HA?
Right. Health advisory level. Sorry. Yes, that's the not MCL, but it's like an MCL sort of, because you just use it as setting some sort of acceptable level. Glenn?
I know we're testing wells in areas that we have historical use of AFFF firefighting foam, but have we even thought about testing the surface water, like Udim, for instance?
When they did the UCMR5, they tested FINA reservoir, and they didn't find anything at it, but we haven't tested Ugam. So I think Guam Water Works is going to do Ugam as part of this new sampling round, but I'm not sure. But there's, I don't think at Ugam there's, if there's any suspected sources or not, I'm just not sure. They're trying to minimize the cost versus the impact, right? So if there's not any known sources, they're not just out there on a fishing trip, because at this point they're not funded for it. We're looking at helping them get some EPA grant money to help pay for the monitoring, but we're not there yet. I want to open up the other presentation. But if anyone has any more questions, please feel free to ask. The next topic, I think, is the septic systems, right?
Oops.
Yeah.
That's not it.
I'm trying to go through this quick, because Connie told me I have 2 minutes to do both, and it's not really working out for 2 minutes, but I'll try to do it in at least 20.
The one next to it, right there. And then same thing on the bottom. Up there.
Okay, just the quick intro on this while you're setting it up. This has come up as kind of an initiative by our office, and I'll explain why it's about to become a pretty hot topic, we think, here at Guam EPA. You can go to the next slide. And this is the issue. So, per the Guam water quality standards, septic systems in the northern Guam aquifer area are limited to 2 single-family homes per acre, which implies a 1/2-acre lot. But the parental subdivision law in Guam allows lots down to 1/4 acre. And Guam EPA, for the last 25-plus years, has been kind of, I guess you would say, not following the water quality standards, and instead following guidance signed by previous administrators of Guam EPA saying that if it's a parentally subdivided lot, you can go ahead and put a septic system down to 1/4-acre lot, which is basically twice as many septic systems as we had intended through the water quality standards. When I got here earlier this year and kind of figured out what was going on, I brought it to our administrator, Walter Leon Guerrero's attention, and we initially tried to put a stop to it, and we were met with a very rapid resistance from the Department of Lands Management saying that you can't do this. Legally, these parental subdivision lots are allowed to develop. And we said, that's not really what we think, but we'll go ahead. And we asked the Attorney General's office for an opinion. And according to what I've been told recently by our attorney, Kristen, that opinion is basically complete and is waiting for the AG's final review and approval. And what it's going to say, we think, is that our water quality standards, the half-acre requirement, overrides any parental subdivision rule. So as a result, and we've shared this with people, they've come into our office saying, hey, I've heard that this is going on, should I buy this 1/4-acre lot? We say, well, if I were you, I wouldn't buy it, because we may turn around tomorrow and say you can't put a septic system on here, and you'll have to wait until sewer comes in. So we're getting that kind of pressure, and you can go to the next slide. To address this, why is it an issue? Right? So here's the environmental issues, right? So obviously we are trying our best to protect the Northern Guamlands Aquifer. It's our sole source water resource. It's designated a sole source aquifer under the Safe Drinking Water Act. And septic systems degrade groundwater quality. We look at nitrate as the chemical, and we talked about this last time, but I'm going to show you some more detail on nitrate as the contaminant that really measures the degradation of groundwater by septic systems, because no matter what you do, you can't really get rid of nitrate beyond a certain point with septic systems. The MCL, which is the maximum contaminant level for nitrate, is 10 milligrams per liter, so that's already a regulated contaminant. It's based on this syndrome, or this condition called blue baby syndrome, where if you feed a baby that's less than 6 months old formula that's been prepared with water above that level, the nitrate gets in there, it's developed in their body as they drink, or it turns into nitrite, I believe. It binds with the hemoglobin in the blood, and so it prevents their blood from absorbing oxygen, and the baby suffocates in clean air and dies very rapidly when this happens. So it's a pretty horrible thing. The MCL goes all the way back to the 1920s or 30s when people figured out what was going on, so it's not new science at all. We've got a few wells in Guam that exceed half of the MCL. When you exceed half of the MCL, you trigger additional requirements under the Safe Drinking Water Act that Guam Water Works is responsible for. You got additional monitoring. You've got to do some studies to figure out where it's coming from. We've recently seen data that Weary has presented, which I wish I had slides of, that show that most of the wells, the majority of wells, I can't tell you how many, but the majority of wells in the Northern Aquifer right now are increasing steadily in nitrate concentration over the past 30 years, basically. In some of these wells, they've projected that if it continues at the same rate, it would exceed the MCL within about 30 years. And that's assuming that it continues at a linear pace, right? But if we're seeing development really ramp up, it's probably not going to be a linear pace. Usually public sewer is considered the way to prevent that. If you're not discharging your wastewater into the ground, then you're not adding to the nitrate problem. Go to the next slide. So just to show you guys, I'm sure you know how it works, but this is how a septic system works. So just in case you don't, you know, your sewage goes into a tank called the septic tank. That is more or less a watertight device, but we talked to a lot of people like, well, how come I have a problem if my septic tank is watertight? I'm not discharging anything. Well, every time you flush the toilet, it just goes out the other end into this other pipe, and that goes into the soil absorption system, a leaching field, they call it. So all that septic tank does, it just pulls out the solids that are in your wastewater. It's a very minimal form of treatment, and you have this partially treated wastewater that goes into your leaching field. And in a perfect environment, that would go into a very nice, high-quality soil, and it would filter slowly down through the soil particles, and bacteria and such would eat away at that wastewater and purify it as it goes down to a certain point. You can only ever get rid of so much nitrate. But in northern Guam, we put these things into limestone instead of into soil. And that drawing is a little bit of an exaggeration, but you know, limestone is known to have cracks and solution channels, and so the assumption is that you don't get any treatment once it goes through to the leaching field. It just goes down these cracks. But I think in reality, you do get additional treatment. So it's not as bad as we think it is, but that's basically how the system works. You can just go to the next slide, if you don't mind. As an extreme example, the island of Saipan, which I worked on for a long time, gives us an example of what happens when you let this go too far. I produced this map a few years ago when I was at the utility there. We had 330 wells we used to create that map, and 11 of those wells exceed the MCL already, and 79 are exceedance of the half MCL. So that's pretty significant degradation. If you go to the next slide, I can show you how that kind of works out. If you go to the next one even, maybe the next. Okay, there we go. So if you look at this map, you see these two areas right here. Those are both unsewered homesteads where you've got buildings at about a 1/4 acre lot size that have all septic systems and no sewer. And this blue line around each of them is the contour for the half of the MCL, the 5 milligrams per liter. And within that, it's all above that, and there's, you can't really see it here, but there's a whole bunch of wells within those areas that exceed the MCL. So you've already seen what happens in Saipan. If you let this go too far, you do exceed the MCL, and this groundwater becomes basically not drinkable. This blue area here is the area of sewerage in Saipan where sewer systems exist. And you can see in most places you don't have the nitrate problem. So the sewer really does work. We've been in these stakeholder meetings, and Weary has sometimes express based on their research that they think sewers are causing the problem, which I think doesn't make much sense, but their perspective is that the old Guam waterworks sewers that are broken and leaking, and I think especially what they're maybe getting at is that when Guam GWA sewers overflow, that raw sewage then goes into ponding basins and such and causes the problem. But I think we've kind of ironed that out now, where they're no longer telling people, like they were before, that, oh, septic systems are better than sewer because, like, no, let's focus on properly functioning sewers. That's really the answer.
Does the sewage treatment plants eliminate nitrates, or is it that they're just discharging into the ocean, to the ground?
They just discharge into the ocean. They can reduce nitrate pretty significantly, and I think the new plant down in Santa Rita, I think it's designed to get down to... Jesse, do you know the nitrate limit for that?
But it's below the water quality standard. So
after the dilution, though. Right?
No, they don't have a dilution.
No mixing zone?
There's no mixing zone for nitrates. Okay. So it's below 0.2.
That's a good question, because we were about to show you what you can do on site to mimic that. So next slide. So our proposal then, and again, this is to address what we anticipate to be a bit of an avalanche of pressure coming on our office from people who want to develop their lots, is to allow the use of what we call advanced on-site wastewater treatment systems to allow development of 1/4-acre lots above the northern Guam Lens aquifer. So I got some pros and cons listed here, and we've handed out kind of a white paper to the working group that we've been working with, which is the Northern Guam Lens Aquifer Working Group, which is something that GWA kind of manages. Pros of this, of our proposal, is that it would allow development of these lots, and you got to remember that there's a lot of people out there that have subdivided their lands years ago, and they think that they have this lot that they can develop, and their neighbors have developed these lots, right? So if we just shut them off today and say, Grandpa, to subdivide it down to 10 lots, and 5 or 6 of the kids have already built their homes, right? We step in now and say, okay, no more. You got those other 5 or 6 kids that haven't gotten it yet. They're going to be like, well, that's not fair, right? So this allows people to develop. It's less expensive than extending sewer service. It's going to cost more for the individual homeowner, but compared to running a GWA sewer line, which is, many millions of dollars, depending on where you're at, I mean, just one subdivision with sewer costs alone could probably be $2 or $3 million. And it has less impact than septic systems on the half acres, which is what our rules allow. So if you had 4 of these systems and they reduce nitrate and other parameters by much more than 50%, you're actually providing less pollution to the aquifer with more of these than a fewer septic systems. Next slide. There's some cons, though, and this is where we've been having our discussions with the working group and where I'm bringing this up to you guys so you can be prepared for the discussion on this when it comes time for a policy. There are considerable cons, right? So they're more expensive than septic tanks. If we tell people you must have one of these instead of a septic tank, suddenly those folks that have been waiting to develop their lots are going to be facing an additional $20,000 or something to build their lot as opposed to their brother or sister who did it the year before. It requires a lot more operation and maintenance than a regular septic system. Most people let a septic system just go without anything, and it just runs and runs, and maybe eventually fails if you don't do anything, but you don't really have to think about it much. There's no guarantee that groundwater will be protected, because if you don't operate these systems properly, they can break down, and you're back to where you were with a regular septic system, or worse. And because of that, we require very careful oversight and regulation by Guam EPA, which would probably mean some additional resources on our part to properly monitor these. We believe, and these are all things that people have talked about in these meetings, especially GWA, they believe that people would be very resistant to connect to sewer because they would be less motivated than when the sewer shows up. Like, hey, I spent $30,000 on this thing, and your sewers overflow all the time anyway. Why should I connect to your sewer? Even though it's the law, right? And, of course, it requires revision of at least 1 Guam EPA regulation and probably a lot more, so we'd have a lot of work to do to get a change passed. So, next slide. So just to show you what I'm talking about with an advanced wastewater treatment system, this is an example of one that one local vendor wants to bring in. You've got a septic tank on the left side over there, just like a regular septic system, but then you have this additional tank, just like a treatment plant in a way. But this one here is relatively simple. It's got one pump on the inside. It just recirculates water. Water collects at the bottom of this tank, and it pumps it up and lets it trickle through these kind of hanging fabric filter media is what they call it, just strips of fabric, really, and bacteria and other microorganisms grow on those, and as the wastewater trickles down through there, it gets aerated, and it gets treated through the biological processes, and it sits in the bottom of the tank and is deprived of oxygen, and that's what you need. You need oxygen and then deprived of oxygen to reduce nitrate. And as you can see here, their data shows, and I'll step you through why this is important. This is their typical results on this type of plant. This is the nitrogen. It's saying less than 20 milligrams per liter. So we know the MCL is 10 milligrams per liter, so you're not meeting the MCL. But if you compare that to a regular septic system's like 70 milligrams per liter, so it gives you 60 to 70% reduction in total nitrogen. VOD and TSS, all less than 10. The treatment plants that GWA operates are only required to meet 30 on these. So these plants really can produce wastewater that's in a lot of ways better than these big wastewater treatment plants that GWA operates.
They're discharging to green.
Yeah, they're discharging marine water. This is going to be groundwater. So, again, we held some stakeholder meetings. I want to summarize just briefly how those went. We've had several of them now. We just had another one on Monday of this week with we had WERI, UOG, UOG WERI, GWA, DOD. We had Senator Perez was there with us, which is great because we really wanted to get her input on this. And various public members and some engineering firms, just anyone who was interested was able to come. What we found through all these meetings is that everyone's very much in support of maintaining these strict septic system density rules, whether it's the half acre or whatever. They don't want to see us just give up on that and let people develop like crazy with septic systems. There's pretty good support, and this week we definitely got a unanimous support for us at least telling people that we're developing a policy to allow development of quarter acre parental subdivision lots with advanced systems if we can regulate them properly, right? So it's kind of a conditional support. And also, we asked some additional questions, too, during these meetings to see how people were feeling, because we've also gotten some pressure from bigger users. Like last month, we had a visitor from Ian Corporation. Ian wants to put a temporary worker housing facility above the northern Guamlins aquifer out in Mingilao, and they want to use one of these plants and not connect to sewer. We pretty much had unanimous support from the group to not allow anything other than just these single-family homes and for parental subdivisions only, because people really expressed a concern that if we do this, that it will lead to sort of a development rush and we'll see a worsening of water quality rather than keeping it improved. Go ahead. So here's our permitting model, just to give you a quick preview of what we might be running past you in the next few months. If we were going to propose to accept these, here's what we would try to do. We would try to make sure that we have approval of what types of systems are being sold and permitted on the island. So people would have to come to us and prove to us via some other regulatory approval package from another state that these systems work and they've been proven to work elsewhere. We would require that the vendor of these systems, who's going to sell and who's going to operate these systems and provide the maintenance, that we evaluate their technical capacity and their stability, their financial capacity to stay in business. And we might even consider putting in requirements for bonding or something like that so that there's some insurance against a company coming in, going out of business, and leaving people with these systems that are not being maintained. We would then, the model we would use then would be to require installation permits, and to allow someone to even install one of these, we'd have to have that proof of a prepaid O&M contract. And then every year we would want to renew an operation permit where they would give us a new operation and maintenance contract so we know that they're set up for the next year, and results of an inspection performed by that service contractor, so that this would minimize the work by our staff, but also assure us that these things are being looked at in the field by licensed and bonded companies that we have licensed, basically. So next. And then enforcement. Our current laws are pretty weak, and this is where we really, even regardless of this proposal, we really need to work with the Senate. We have two laws, the Toilet and Sewerage Law, whatever it's called, and then the Water Pollution Control Act, that both limit what we can do. We cannot issue fines as an agency under either of those laws, and that covers a huge number of our regulations. Water quality standards, well, not huge, but significant. Water quality standards, the individual wastewater disposal, the septic system rules, and the toilet, the sewer connection rules. Under any of those rules, we can issue orders. We can tell people what to do, but if they fail to do something, we cannot issue a fine. We have to go through the Attorney General's office, and they have to issue a misdemeanor charge, put someone in jail, and a $1,000 a day fine, which is very impractical. You know, we don't have control of that, and it's maybe a little too extreme for most of what we do. So we need to get those things fixed up so we had better enforcement provisions. We talked to GWA. One of the biggest incentives people have to follow sewer rules that GWA has is if they don't, you shut off their water. So we'd like to have that ability with these two, that if someone failed to do the right thing, we'd have the ability to shut off their water. Because our fear is, and everyone's fear is, that if we did have that ability to set fines, we'd give someone a fine, they'd still just not do anything because they don't expect it to ever follow through, or they can't pay or whatever. If you shut off their water, they have the motivation to fix things. The group wants a cutoff date, again, because of this fear of triggering some kind of a development boom, where after we said that we would allow quarter-acre lots to be developed, and say that, you know, this is lots that were subdivided up until this date, whether that's the day of the law or some other date they set, we don't know. And then after that, you have to meet the half-acre requirement. That's one of the provisions that people are settling on. And then everyone really wants us to strictly enforce this whole sewer connection rule. There's been a long history of not enforcing that. And unfortunately, that's a rule that Guam EPA enforces. It's, from my understanding, it's been not really strongly enforced, because when we have, people have come in and said, are you kidding me? You know, Guam EPA, or the contractor's going to charge me $15,000 to run that pipe. You can't make me do that. And the way the law is written, the administrator has the ability to issue exceptions. So guess what happens? The exceptions get issued, and eventually our staff stop enforcing that. So people are very concerned that if we did allow these things, that we would be even more reluctant to enforce that rule. So that's a concern. Not sure how to address that at this point, but I'm throwing that out there. Next, I think that might be it. No? Oh, these are the specific changes we need to make. I won't spend much time on this, but we do need to revise probably two regulations. We could do this with a minimum of just fixing the water quality standards. We could get started with that. But to really do it right, we'd have to revise the individual wastewater system regulations and also the two statutes that are involved to fix those enforcement requirements. So it's a pretty significant load there in terms of making regulation changes. But if we decide to move forward with this, and I think we're coming close to a point, and we'll probably ask you guys to kind of make a policy decision saying go forward or not, then we'll start working on these. Next, I think that's it. Is that it? Sorry, Connie. Oh, one side issue, and this is happening very soon. So those rules about the half-acre lot, they only apply in what's called the groundwater protection zone, and that's based on a 1980-something map. I don't know what the year was. And that is the map right there. It's kind of weird because it shows Guam laying on its side. So that's northern Guam over here, Anderson Air Force Base down on that end. But you can see, if you look at Weirdy's mapping they're doing now, it's, you know, nice curved lines that go around that show the aquifer. And what's really strange about this is that it jogs in here and just cuts out the whole airport and Harmon and Agania areas where a lot of our water is really coming from. So talking with Weary, they really don't think this is right. So you can go to the next slide. There's a mechanism for updating this map, and we're going to start that now. And I wish Kristen was here to correct me if I'm wrong. But we're going to work with Weary to provide a revised map very quick, because Weary knows what they're doing. They know how this should be. All we have to do is just basically decide, okay, where are we going to draw that line? Then they draw that line. We provide that to the Department of Lands Management, and they have to provide, per law, the meets and bounds description of that area. So it'll go from a nice curved map probably to something that looks kind of jagged again. And then we have a rule in the law that appears to not require any kind of regulation, but we have to hold a public hearing. And then once we've held the public hearing, we adopt the new map. So that would be something that you guys would do then, would be, you know, voting on adopting that map based on the results of the public hearing. And from what we understand of the law anyway, because it doesn't say it has to be adopted by regulation, we would just adopt that through a resolution of the board, I guess. So these are the things that are coming up in the next few months. I think that's the end now. Yes.
Good work.
Good job.
Yeah. I'm amazed, you know, you put a Cagman and Dandan there, man, those things are like red zone.
Yeah, they're terrible. And I hate to even admit that I worked at the DEQ there, but all that development happened before I was there, in my defense. But that was just the practice. Like, oh, we don't need to worry about density.
And then it was
development pressures. It was homesteads that were issued to, you know, the indigenous landowners. And the political pressure was there to just go ahead and hand it out before they put in the infrastructure. Say, we'll put in infrastructure. Don't worry. We'll come in with the sewer later. Well, it never happened. And there's the result. So...
Well, yeah, I mean, there, you know, you got a social economic policy where, you know, people need, a lot of those folks didn't have land to build a house. And it was like, okay, we need to have a program to give people land to build a house.
Yeah, but then the government never came in and fulfilled their promise. So that was the problem. But that's the results. You end up with undrinkable water. And no one drinks the water there, so it's kind of less of an issue. They're all like, ah, we don't drink the water.
I know, but I don't know if those... wells, or I mean, because you got the tanks at the top of Cagman. I don't know if they're pumping from those wells up to the tanks.
And so, as those wells are full of water that's, you know, 7-8 parts per million nitrate or whatever, right? And whatever else goes along with that soap.
I mean, as an outsider, when I came here, when I read these, like, homestead rules, I was like, what is all this about? Now I know.
We're, I think the group as a whole that we met with, the working group, is very, you know, we feel like this is the right time for Guam to step in now and do something before we end up there. We feel like we have enough time to maybe slow that rise and catch it now. There's other sources of nitrate, right? There's agriculture and that kind of thing, but it seems like it's mostly development that's causing that increase.
Interesting.
You know, Chamorro Land Trust, they have a lot of underdeveloped properties and substandard housing, and you know, we just did an inspection up there just a couple of hours ago. And a lot of the homes that are there, they're occupied by...
I thought I was going to be out there too, that's why I wore the long sleeves.
10 or more people, that's like the ground zero for dengue outbreak. But you know, what I was getting to is this, is that, you know, we have regulations to address people who have, you know, sewer setups or who have water, who have power. These guys don't have nothing.
Yeah.
So they're collecting rainwater. They're, you know, they're pissing and crapping all over the place.
You know,
and we have nothing on that.
And in theory, our laws actually cover that whole toilet and sewer connection law, which we enforce, says there's three types of sewer that, or what they call toilet facilities that are legal. And if you're in a home, you must be connected to one of them. And one is connection to sewer, and one's connection to a permitted septic system. The other one's a pit privy, but then the rules then later say no pit privies allowed. It's only for farms or something. So in theory, all those homes...
are not homes?
Well, they're not legal per our rules. And
On Swamp Road, those are old farms out there, and then people
farming
relocate.
Maybe junk vehicles, but yeah.
Okay. Great, thanks for making a cheerful end of the day.
Hey,
thank you, Brian.
New business, proposed UST rules and regs. Is that Mike and Daniel?
Okay, Bob, we did was we prepared some fact sheet for you guys to read. When I'm doing a presentation, we just want to let you know that we're going to what happened was that in March 12, 2019, the combiner bill notified Guam EPA that the regulation that we had did not comply with the 2.8 process.
Hmm.
So what we had to do is redo the regulation again. But EPA revised their regulation in March 2015. So the regulation that you have in front of you would comply with that regulation. So just to let you know that we are going to a 2.8 process. Right now, the public comment period just ended.
Did you receive any comments?
Did you get any?
There was no comment. No. Well, there was one comment received, if you read the back sheet. And that was about the vent pipe requiring double wall piping, which it's not required. And just to let you know again that the regulation in front of you was reviewed by EPA headquarters, Ms. Elizabeth McDermott. And she's in charge with the regulation development and state program approval, which we are going to seek after the regulation has been approved. Yeah, so the next board meeting, we're going to wait at least until the next board meeting to present to you for a vote or a resolution for us to go forward to the AG's office and taking, you know, for them to approve it also.
Okay. So, your homework for next meeting. So there wasn't any changes since the last one that we did
The changes is based on the 2015. Okay. The one we had before didn't comply with the pulling process, so we ditched that and we did the regulation.
So technically it's all the same as that meeting.
Technically it's the same as the revised 2015 EPA regulation.
Right, okay.
And this has been already reviewed by EPA headquarters. Mm-hmm. That's why we're, you know, just letting you know in advance.
Thank
as far as, you know, approving it, we'll set up a resolution for the next board meeting. We'll have to wait for maybe a couple of weeks to make sure that there's no mail coming in on the comments for the proposed regulation itself. Okay. Since the comment period ended.
There's a connection to getting these things done because of the
we're complying with the AAA process.
No, but the Energy Act, this is why EPA is interested. Remember when we had to do those regulations and statutes because it was tied to grants and everything.
Yes, yes. And so like I said, there's grants. Right now, we're utilizing the federal regulation to comply with whatever inspections we do out there.
But we need this for primacy, right? So we can take over the program do the inspections.
And what's happening is that right now, if you pass the regulation, if EPA comes in, they'll look at, they'll use the regulation set of hours. So if we get a spot or a state program approval, then what EPA has to use is our regulation to do their inspection.
Okay.
That's what we're looking for.
Okay.
To have primacy on the use of the regulations. So if you need us to do a presentation next time for you to vote, we will do it.
My understanding is if we have this enforced, then any fees collected, we keep. Is that right?
Pardon me, ma'am?
Any fees...
The statutes allow us to collect a permit fee currently.
Okay.
And that's, we haven't not changed that.
Oh, so we get to keep it still?
Yes, yes, ma'am.
That's a little UF.
No,
UF.
This is just a regulation itself.
Right, right.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Hans.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
It would be nice to get those finally done.
Yes, sir.
The UST, man.
So we're on to vision statement, mission statement, agency name in Chamorro.
So it's in part. It's in your packet. It's what's been translated by the
Commission
Chamorro.
Yeah, it's directed from the governor's office. So basically, Angela, Kiyoki, and myself went to the training. And we got assistance from the commission to make sure our Chamorro verbiage is correct. So if you notice on our letterhead, our agency name is already translated on Chamorro, and it's there. And then the bottom is our vision statement. But apparently, I guess it was in error. So they went ahead and updated the spelling of the Chamorro translation. And then also our mission statement. Which is actually on our website, but now we are required to include the Chamorro version of it. That goes along with all of our signage and all of that stuff within the building and outside, but that's a work in process, so for now at least we can do this part to being to comply. So basically I just wanted to show you guys, just get an approval add it onto the website, basically.
Move to approve.
I'll second.
Thank you.
Okay. All in favor?
We'll let the Howard
vote. Steve, you get to read it to us, Steve.
Yeah, you have a chance. In the Chamorro version.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Anybody got anything else? Anybody on the board have anything they want to?
It was mentioned in the minutes about Verona. Were they issued any NOBs or?
Kristen's not here, right?
No.
Okay, it's with Kristen.
Okay. What was
they haven't they haven't done they haven't they haven't done anything.
Are they, they're closed
no, they
now.
Had
I
that
think.
1 week that they started doing stuff, and then stopped.
So you gave them NOVs.
Yeah. So I told them that, you know, I'll be honest with you, we're gonna give you an NOV, but you know, you should go ahead and just start cleaning up. So they started cleaning up, and they said,
So they
kind of stopped. Yeah.
So the parking structure is still the same problem in their apartments.
Lot. Again, it's really bad, the parking lot. So they're going, we went with a written warning with a parking lot. Now we're going with an NOV as well, and that's with Kristen. So the two are with him, with her, for her comments, and then once it's approved, we'll issue the notice of violation and hold them to the
Okay. That'll get them going.
Yep, hopefully. Anybody got anything else?
I've noticed in the minutes that, did anything happen with the new house or this place? Three properties.
I've mentioned that on the administrator's report that we're working with the office of the governor, BDMR, in regards to security. We did go out a couple of weeks ago to take a look at some potential sites. I'm not sure what.
Yeah, right through the cemetery.
Right through the cemetery up in Nimitz Hill. That for sure is out.
Nice view.
There's just no way a building can be even developed there.
Nice view.
It is a nice view, but it kind of slopes down, and you, in order to get into the office, if we do have an office, you're going through some cemetery. No thanks.
And the property also, the property is in a deep natural.
I did. I told them. I said it does. It goes all the way down.
Sinkhole.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a literally big
danger.
Hole in the bottom. That's what up at Nimitz. The first one we went to go look at was the one up at by Fadian, right next to GPA.
No.
There's issues on that as well, too. So. There's some issues on that. The third one we went to was in Upper Tumon by the airport, down the airport road, right behind the old
golf course thing.
Golf course, or the new golf course that's coming up. It's kind of ways in. It's more of trying to find the entrance in that will be more feasible for the public. That one there is will be the difficult part, because the only access way in there would be through the backside. Of there, the gentle dental care.
That's so cute.
And it's really a tight way in. There's residents, there's houses in there.
Oh, yeah,
so
it's a one lane.
Yeah, it's a one way
in.
One way in, one way out. So that, yes. So really an access entrance point into that place would be the first priority as well.
Will
just
from the Home Depot side in the future or no?
There are private properties there already in front of the
So
that lot is like literally right behind some private properties.
It's landlocked.
Yeah.
But they're
so it looks like the best place?
They're trying to. So I know that, what is his name?
Jack
Haptic?
Yeah,
he said, you know, he'll try to look for more additional sites for us to see potential sites. I mean, now that we're really moving the ball on with the governor's office and BBMR and DOI and trying to get the securing additional funding.
Did we engage with the ancestral lands?
We've engaged with ancestral lands. We've engaged with Department of Land Management and Chamorro Land Trust.
What about the airport?
Not the airport.
Have you guys engaged with the airport?
There is no free land for the airport to give.
Actually, the old GPD property back here.
Is it a property? Or I don't think that's airport. Is that airports? Can take a look at it and see if that's on airport.
Well, you just raise the building and build a new one.
I'll check it out. I'll let the administrator know.
Either that or we go to Nevada too.
In the meet, what's not also part of the administrators that I forgot is that we've been working with ancestral lands on the ops building. So Gita has offered to do the bid for the roof repair. So, in lieu of, or not in lieu, but they will have a bid going out for the roof repair for our operations building to have them repair, since we've been going to the meetings last month, for them in regards to the dilapidated building over there. So we're crossing our fingers. They're going to fork the bill for the repairs and everything.
Okay.
So. Yes. Yes.
So should we set the next meeting then?
Yeah.
Third Thursday. I leave off island on the 15th, but
it's the 17th.
Don't need me here for it.
Either the 17th or the 24th.
Yeah, I'll be gone from the 15th through the 1st of November. I'll be at Waste County.
Is Terry rerunning it?
Okay. 17th.
Okay.
You guys okay with 17?
Yeah.
Okay. 17th it is.
No cookies.
No cookies. Now, Terry, you gotta bake cookies after.
No, Terry, just stop by Crown Bakery.
You don't want me baking anything. Just go pick up some Oreos or something.
There you go.